Wherefore, I, Lehi, prophesy according to the workings of the Spirit which is in me, that there shall none come into this land, save that shall be brought by the hand of the Lord. 2 Nephi, chapter 1, verse 6.
Can we talk more like we did on the roof, looking back on it like we needed some proof. It happened, we were locked out in the cold, peasant creatures with a knife in my hold. I'm starting to think.
I'm talking today with, and it feels like an old friend, right?
Yeah.
Feels like we've known each other for a long time, but really it's only been 3 years.
Almost 3 years, yes. In May, we complete our 3 years here in the United States.
Okay. So Fatma and her family are refugees and they came from Syria. So one of the things that I was wondering about is your life in Syria as a child. What do you remember?
When I was a child, we used to live in Damascus, the capital. My father had his job there in Damascus, so we had to live close to him. I grew up in a big city, in a beautiful city. I went to good schools there, elementary and middle school. It was so active. I liked Damascus, so yeah.
What kind of a student were you? Were you a good student?
Yeah, I always used to be the first.
I can see that.
Yeah, especially in elementary school. Yeah, I was like the big image for the whole students.
What did you think you would do when you grew up, when you lived in Syria?
When I was a child, I dreamed to complete my education and to be a doctor. That was my dream and my parents' dream, to have me complete that dream and become a doctor. After that, but something changed. So my father had to go back to his village. So we moved back to Dara. So it was a little bit difficult for me because I used to live in a big city with my friends. So when I left them, that was like a little bit crushing for me. So I didn't think about my dream anymore. I changed it to be an English language teacher.
Is that when you started learning English?
No, I started learning English before. But after that, I thought I'm so interested to learn how to speak. And I'm so interested to learn about English language. So I thought maybe I can complete in this field. I can become an English language teacher.
Well, how was your relationship with your parents?
It was very, very strong. You know, the Oriental community is very strong. So the relationship between the parents and the kids is very, very good. And we used to sit every day together to talk, to share everything.
Have you noticed a difference in family relationships in Syria versus family relationships in the United States?
A little bit, not very much, but a little bit different. Like in certain relationships, there's no private life. So my life is open to all my family. But here in America, everyone has his private life.
A private life. It's so interesting. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's totally true. When you were a young child, did you have any impressions of America or any ideas of what America was like?
Everything I was thinking about America was like, it's a very freedom country. You can do everything. Actually, to be honest, I didn't think about America too much because I wasn't expecting one day I will come to the United States. I didn't think I will be a member of this community. So it wasn't like a big idea to me to know about it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So tell me, how old were you when you got married?
19.
19. And how did you meet your husband?
My husband, he is from my relatives, but not very close. It's hard to explain it because it's like a crazy relative relationship. But yeah, I knew him through my family. He is a relative from a far side. But I met him when I was 16 years old, and he fell in love with me.
Of course.
Thank you. And when he asked me when I was 16 to marry him, I refused because I wanted to complete my education. After high school, he asked me one more time, and I thought maybe, yeah, this is the, it's a good time to say yes. So, yeah.
So how do you see that marriage is different here? For example, I have been told by other refugees that their families have a lot to do with choosing the person that they will marry. Was that the case for you, or was it 100% your choice?
It was 100% my choice. Nobody forced me to say yes or to say no. Other families do, but not my family. There are a lot of rules to get married in my country. Like, you have to, for the man, he has to be a very good man, has a good job, and ask to marry the girl through her family. He cannot contact with her directly. Or if he does, he needs to be sure he will get married with her. There's no, like, boyfriends or girlfriends there. If he needs to get married to a girl, he needs to be honest.
So you got married.
Yeah.
And then typically in the United States, when someone gets married, they move out. They move away from their family and they start their own family.
Yes, the same. The same, yeah.
The same? Did you move somewhere with your husband?
Yeah, when we got married, we went back to Damascus. So I lived with him in Damascus, the capital, for a while. Then we moved back to Daraa because I thought maybe Daraa is better because it's closer to my family. Yeah, because I got pregnant, so I can be close to my family so they can take care of me. And yeah.
Were you able to ever work as an English teacher, fulfill your dream?
No, I couldn't do that because when I got married, I got pregnant and things went very hard. Things went harder, so I couldn't do that.
So how long after you got married did you leave Syria with your husband?
10 years.
Oh, for 10 years, okay.
Yeah.
How were those 10 years for you in Syria?
The most beautiful 10 years for me. Yeah. I hope I can go back to that time and live the same quiet life, the same lovely life. Yeah.
What do you miss the most?
My apartment, my neighbors.
Why?
Because it was filled in love. Everything was not perfect. It was not like so easy, but it was good for us. It was, everything was organized. Everything was taken care of. We were living a quiet life. Yeah, so maybe I cannot explain good well, but that time, the most ever good time to me.
So tell us what happened that made you decide to leave Syria.
Yeah, after 2 years of the war started in 2011. In 2013, my family, my whole family, like my mom, my brothers, my sisters, had all left Syria to Jordan. So they kept calling me, why you don't leave? Because it's dangerous there, like bombing, shooting. And yeah, the war was dangerous. And they kept calling me, why you don't leave? And my husband didn't want to leave because he had his job and he didn't want to lose everything. And we were hoping like it will end. It will come to end, the war at least. But actually one day our apartment ceiling had bombed, so it was gone. So our apartment wasn't livable to live in anymore. So after that, we left to my father-in-law house, but it was very crowded there. So his old daughters with their families, husbands and kids were there. So it wasn't enough to live there. The house was not big enough for all people to live there. So while my family were calling, why you don't leave? So finally, my husband decided to take a unpaid break from his job for 3 months. So he said, we can leave for 3 months. Maybe the war will get to the end in this few months. So we left to Jordan.
What was it like for you living in a country that was at war?
It was very dangerous. It was scary.
So that's what helped you finally decide to leave? That and the fact that your mother and brothers and sisters, were you the last one in your family?
Yes, I was the last one who left Syria. Yeah. So the first 2 years of the war, it was dangerous, but we were thinking like, okay, maybe we can handle it because we used to go to the bottom of the building and hide. And so we thought maybe we can handle it. But after our apartment was gone, we couldn't live anymore.
So what was it like to leave?
It was like to leave everything, to leave our dreams, to leave our apartment, our homeland, our neighbors, my husband's family. So yeah, it was hard to leave. It was hard to leave everything and leave.
At the time, did you think it would just be for 3 months?
Yes. At that time, yes. We thought maybe it will be only a few months. Then we can come back. That's why we didn't take anything. I just took a very small bag of clothes for my 3 kids, and that's it. We didn't take anything.
So when did you realize it would be longer?
After we left.
What happened? What changed?
We realized that we cannot go back because the war was going harder and worse. So it was very hard to go back because no place, no safe, nothing to go back to.
Now, I think you've told me before, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the city that you are from is Dara, right?
Yes, yes.
What happened to your city after you left?
After I left, the war went worse and harder, so the whole city was affected by military. So bombs and shooting and, you know, between the military and rebels, it was very hard fighting. So it was not totally damaged, but almost most of the cities and villages were damaged.
Do you know what happened to your home?
To my apartment?
Yes.
I didn't know till last year because there was no way to know about or no way to take a video or a photo because our city was no one in there. It was empty. So I couldn't reach anyone to tell us about our apartment or to take a photo for it. But last year, I had my friend. She was out of the city and she came back. So she took a video and sent it to me. And it was totally damaged. It was worse than when we left.
So what was your life like in Jordan?
It was very, very, very hard and difficult. Because, you know, when we left to Jordan, we had no money, no nothing. Not enough clothing for our kids. When we left, it was April. And when the winter came, they had no heavy clothes or we didn't have enough money to buy gas for heating or something. So yeah, we lived there for 3 years, but it really was very, very hard. Maybe the hardest part of our life was in Jordan.
Was in Jordan.
Because my husband, he couldn't work. He wasn't allowed to work.
So where did you live?
The first time, in the beginning, we lived in the Al-Za'atari camp. Maybe you heard about it before.
Yes.
Then after maybe a few months, we left to the city Erbid. We lived there for the rest of the 3 years.
What are your strongest memories of living in Jordan?
Our hunger, our like cold days, cold winters, because we hadn't gas enough. Maybe for 2 or 3 days we have gas, yes. After that, for weeks we don't have gas. Or for hunger, yeah, we lived for many days without like food. We just ate bread, only bread. We weren't like resettled, you know what I mean? Yeah. We were like all the time, we were afraid, we were scared to go back to Syria. We didn't know anything about our future in Jordan. It was unknown.
So when did it become a possibility for you to be resettled in the United States?
After 3 years in Jordan, the IOM, you know what IOM, right?
I'm not sure. Tell me.
It's maybe the international organization for, I don't know, the M for maybe immigration or something. But they called us. We weren't allowed to apply to be a refugee in other countries in the world. But IOM choose names from the system. So when they called us and they asked us, would you like to travel to United States? We had no idea about it, but we directly said yes, because we wanted to get out of that situation, you know? So yeah, after 3 years, they called us, and it took maybe a year and a half to finish all interviews and United States.
Before you came to the United States, what were your impressions of the United States?
Maybe we didn't have any ideas, but we thought it's the country of freedom. So we can do whatever we want to do. We can get jobs. We can enroll our kids into the schools very easily. We didn't have an enough or a complete image about the life in the United States, but we believe that it will be better for us.
So was it? What happened when you arrived?
Yes, it was. Yeah, it is. Because here, after we came, we had a resettlement agency which helped us to rent an apartment and to find jobs, to attend English classes, to apply for the government documents, which is like social security numbers, food stamps, Medicaid. So it was the hardest part. They helped us to finish it. And we have amazing American friends such like you and many others. They really are helping and supporting, and they're really very good friends.
So was there anything difficult or different than you expected when you arrived?
For me, because maybe I speak English, it wasn't difficult for me to attend this community. But maybe for my husband, because he doesn't speak English, it was hard for him to find a job or to learn English. For many other people, it's hard because maybe the main reason because of the language, but it's not very, very hard because everyone can learn English. Everyone can find a job. Everyone can live however he wants to.
So coming to the United States, what were some of the most surprising things about living here?
To be open to the community more. Like I can get a job easily, not like in my country, because in my country it's not easy for women to get jobs. I can learn whatever I want to. I can complete my education, even if in another field. Like I studied in Syria after high school, I studied publishing and posting, but I didn't complete it. So here I'm trying to go back to school to nursing classes. So this is not my field, but I can do it. So I can do whatever I want to. I can complete my education, get a job, travel, whatever I want to do, I can do.
You mentioned that as a woman, it's easier to get a job in the United States.
Yes, much easier.
Are there other things that are different about being a woman in the United States?
Yes, like women here are more, not free, but they are more like movable. Like they can go out easily. They can drive a car. They can go wherever they want to go. In Syria, it was not like this easy. Women, it wasn't common in Syria for women to drive. It wasn't common for women in Syria to get jobs. So because men take care of everything, so women just stay home, take care of kids, that's it.
If you were a woman in Syria and you wanted to drive and you wanted to work, what did people think of that?
they will think I'm so strong woman and I'm like brave because it's not usual.
Was it accepted or did people disapprove of it in any way? Did they tell you that women should stay home or were you encouraged?
No, it was accepted, but because it was in common. So it was like kind of strange.
Okay. So after coming to the United States, I can imagine that coming here was like learning a whole new way of life. There's different systems. Yes. For doing things, different, even going to the grocery store is different. Everything you do is different.
Yeah. Even going to the doctor appointments, it's different because there we don't go to the doctor as much as we do here. It's crazy here about doctor appointments. One more thing. If someone gets like sick, he can go to the pharmacy and talk to the pharmacist. I'm feeling like this. I need a medicine or a shot or something. They can have it without a prescription. But here, no, it's no way. So it's harder here.
You spend a lot of time going to the doctor.
Yes. Yes. And doctor appointments are crazy.
So what are some of your favorite things about living in the United States?
My favorite things here that I can reach anything I want to, like I can reach my goal. No limits for your dream. Yeah, that's the more lovely things I like here.
That's wonderful. So when you look at your children and how you and your husband are raising them, how are you trying to help them be Syrian and American at the same time? I know you speak Arabic in your home, right?
Yes, yes.
But you also speak English. How are you navigating having a very strong family Syrian culture and yet being in America with your children?
That's the challenge, actually, because we want them to success here and to prove their language, to build their future. But at the same time, we need them to keep talking Arabic, to keep the culture, the religion. That's the challenge to manage both, you know? So we speak Arabic at home. Sometimes for my second grade daughter, sometimes it's difficult for her to express something in Arabic. So she switched to English. So she knows I can understand her. So she talks freely. About the culture, we're trying just to keep our traditional culture things like Ramadan, like Eid, like talking about mosque, like reading the Holy Quran. Something like that, like talking about our religion, just to remind them to keep in their mind about where are we from and who they are, and their religion, and everything about their homeland. At the same time, we are raising them to build their future, to success, and to do whatever they like to do. Like my daughter, she always keeps to ask me, Mom, what do you think I can choose to be in the future? My oldest. She doesn't know. She's confused. And they just tell her, just choose something you like to do. Don't only follow like the high degree or something. No, just do whatever you like to do. Because if you do something you don't like to do, you will not success. But whatever you like to do, you will success in it. Like, even if it's like a dishwasher, if you like it, you will success in it. But if you are going to become a doctor and you don't like it, you will not success with it. So it's about that. It's just managing about both.
How do you think, as your daughters grow, how will it work for them when they want to get married?
I think I need to advise them that we have our rules. I'm not so strict with that. So not okay with a boyfriend, but it should be none to us. So we have to know about it. We have to watch. We have to have the chance to advise her what's wrong, what's right. And she has to know that the end of this relationship is marriage. It's not about like only having fun. So yeah, she can do, but she needs to end that up with marriage.
That's great. So you're Muslim?
Yes.
Hi. I'm Stephen Carter. Since 1975, Sunstone Magazine has been publishing the best of Mormon thought and experience. And now, Sunstone is also a podcast, where you can listen to Audible-quality recordings of our best articles, essays, stories, and poetry, both new and classic. Come get a taste with our free episodes at patreon.com/sunstone. We look forward to being a part of your journey.
Do you consider yourself to be a very strong Muslim? Some people go to mosque every week, other people once a month. How strongly or how often do you practice your religion?
I am a Muslim, but I don't command myself a very, very strong Muslim. The closest mosque to us is 40 minutes driving from here, so it's not easy to reach the mosque. So we prefer to do our repay here in our home. Mm-hmm. But I'm not so strong. I'm not so strict. Can manage between my religion and the community I'm living in. Because when I was in Syria, we used to wear, you know, the long dress, abaya. We used to wear it. It was not common for us to wear pants or short dresses or something. But here we need to, because it's hard to, like, to be stranger. You can manage both. So it's good. It's not like fashion or something, but at the same time it's flexible, so you can go out, you can drive, you can do whatever you want to do. So that was an example. So I practice my religion as freely. I'm not so strong.
So this reminds me, I met a refugee family one time, and the man and his wife were standing there, and I did not extend my hand to him because I knew that he probably did not want to shake my hand.
Yes.
In most, you know, conservative Muslim cultures, men and women do not touch each other. I was surprised when he stuck out his hand to me.
Yes.
And I shook his hand and I said, I wasn't trying to be rude. I just didn't think that you would want to shake my hand. And he told me something that I thought was so interesting. He said, in my country, I would not shake your hand, but because I am here and yes, I want to be friendly, and I recognize that this is a way that men and women express friendship to each other.
Yes.
I'm willing to shake women's hands.
Yes, that's what I was talking about. So because we are here, sometimes we do some like exceptions. So sometimes in our country, we don't do that. But because we are here and some kind of showing respectful or showing acceptable to other people, to American people, we do some things we didn't used to do in our countries. Like shake hands is a very good example. Other example, the clothes. And other example that like the parties, like in our country, we didn't use to make birthday parties. But here sometimes we do, because we didn't want to be strangers.
Right, right. Are there any other aspects of practicing your religion that are difficult here in the United States?
No, actually. Sometimes fasting Ramadan, it's not difficult, but it's like you feel like you're different. Because last Ramadan I was working, so when I used to go to the work and everyone is eating, everyone is drinking, and I'm not. So I had to explain to each other, to everyone, that I'm fasting and my religion, in my religion I have to do that. I don't have to eat or drink until the sundown. So yeah, but it wasn't like a difficult thing to do, but it was only like a strange thing to do.
So do you find yourself having to explain it to a lot of people?
Yeah.
And how do they receive your explanations?
In a good way. They received it in a good way. Like my supervisor, when I explained that for him, and he saw me after 2 weeks of Ramadan, very tired, very like in low power. He told me, you can just rest in your home for the rest of this month. After that, you can come back. And they did.
Oh, that's so nice. So many people have been understanding?
Some people, they didn't hear about it. Maybe it was the first time for them to hear about it from me. So it was strange for them. They didn't understand why. So why you you don't have to drink or eat for 17 hours. They thought it wasn't fair, but yeah. So I explained for them and yeah, they understood. Even for my hijab, mm-hmm. my cover, I had a lot of questions about why are you hitting your hair? Do you have hair? some of the questions. Do you have hair? And they, yeah, sometimes if they were women, I used to show them my pictures on my phone. Well, yes, I have hair.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so yeah.
Do you like answering questions like that, or do you wish people would just mind their own business?
Yes, I would love to answer questions because that explain me to them so they can accept me more.
Why do you wear a hijab?
Because my religion asked me to do. And I grew up in a Muslim community. So I cannot like get out of that circle of Muslim community. Even if I'm in the United States, but there are some headlines I cannot get over. So like hijab, like fasting Ramadan, like praying, like don't drink, don't eat pork, don't have sex without or out of marriage. So that's like headlines. I cannot get over of them wherever I will be in the whole world. So yeah, that's why, because of my religion.
So there are some hard lines that you just will not cross, no matter yeah. where you live, no matter who you're with.
Yes, this is the identification for me as a Muslim woman.
I think a lot of people from different religious backgrounds can understand that there's just some rules or commandments or parts of your religion that no matter where you are, those are important to you to
yes.
take.
Yes, and I'm teaching my kids about those. Like I'm teaching my daughters. Like my oldest daughter, she wears hijab. And my other daughter, she's second grade, and she wish she could. But for me, I think she's still young. So maybe in 2 or 3 years, she will wear hijab. And the idea is acceptable for her because she used to see me. She used to see her older sister. So that's easy for her.
Have you experienced any discrimination because of wearing your hijab?
No. Other side, I saw so many like encouragement. Like when I were in Phoenix, without a car in the beginning of my coming to United States, we used to use bus. So I was waiting for the bus in the bus stop and a man crossed me on a bicycle and he said, "Assalamu alaikum." And I replied and he said, I like your scarf. Other situation, I was driving and the other side of the street, it was a red light. So I heard a sound. When I looked, it was a man in his car and he was like honking.
Honking?
Yes. Yes. To me, just to look to him. And when I looked, he said he put the thumb up.
Thumbs up.
Yeah. He just did this like he wanted to say, "I like your hijab. I know." But he was so far from his car. So yeah, that was good situations, good reactions from American people to me. I haven't met any racist people till now, thank God. But all people I know here in the United States, I love them and they are a very good examples about American people. Nice. So I haven't met any bad people here. All people I know here, Christian or Muslims, they are amazing.
That makes me so glad. So glad to hear. Because there certainly are people in the United States that do not want refugees to be here.
Yeah, yeah.
What would you say to those people?
I say, why? Why you don't want refugees to be here? Because it's a very big country, and it's not only about Americans. You can see a lot of nationalities, like Chinese, like whatever. A lot of races here in the United States. So we are another type, another kind, another race from a country had a very bad time with war. So we escaped to here. We didn't come to here by we didn't choose to come to here, but we had to escape from the war to save our lives and our kids' lives. So why you don't want us to be here? We are not going to take your country from you. We are going to share, and we are going to be an active people in this community. We are not going to be like a heavy load in your shoulders.
That's wonderful. One of the things that I remember you saying at a dinner that we were at together, somebody asked you a question, and I don't even remember what the question was, but you said, every night I think of Syria when I go to sleep.
Yes.
And I cry in my pillow, and I fall asleep, and I wipe my tears the next morning, and I get up, and I go to work.
Yes.
Why did you say that?
Because I have to get up. I cannot just lay down and destroy my future and my kids' future. I have to. There's no time to just to lay down or to relax, especially now because we are not in our country yet. We are not citizens yet. So we need to build up our future in our hands. In our country, we had a house, we had jobs, we had relatives, it was our land. But here we still strangers. So we have to raise ourselves to the top to be acceptable to others. If we just sit down and just be lazy, and because even if we are active, some people, they don't accept us. So there's no chance to just to sit down and relax. We need to improve ourselves.
Would you go back to Syria if you could?
In the future, for a visit, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. But you want to make America your home, it sounds like.
Yes.
Become citizens and...
Yes.
So you're just always going to live with this tug of war in your heart between Syria and America?
Yes. Because I love Syria, but Syria now is like a sick body. You cannot live now in Syria. Maybe, we don't know, maybe in many years, you cannot live in Syria. So my kids' future is here. My future is here. So for a visit, when I become a citizen and I can go, because now I cannot, even if I have a green card, I cannot go back, even for a visit. But when I become a citizen and I want to visit Syria, I can. I can go there. And I would love to go there for a visit, but not to go back to live there. No.
Well, when you go back, I want you to take me with you.
Yeah. Yes. Because
everything that I have experienced of Syrian people is the most amazing love and generosity, hospitality.
Yes.
It's overwhelming. Many times I have visited homes of refugees like yours in the beginning when you had very little. And yet you wanted to feed me and welcome me into your homes. And so I just thank you so much.
Yes, absolutely.
For teaching me about your country and your people and your food. Oh, thank you so much for the food. That's been the best part.
Yeah, I'm so glad. And I'm so blessed to have you in my life here in the United States, because you are one of my amazing friends that I will never ever leave them or forget them. And even if you are far from me now, but you are here, my heart.
Yes, always. And the friendships have actually been the best part, because I feel like as I have gotten to know you and other refugees, my heart has grown and my world has grown. And I'm so grateful to have met you and to know you. Do you still have family in Jordan? Or in Syria?
In Jordan, yes. The first sister who left Syria to Jordan, she's still there because she hadn't a chance to come to the United States or to any country in the world. IOM didn't choose her or her case. And in Syria, I have two brothers who were living in Jordan, but they left to Syria after a few years because they thought maybe Syria is easier to live than Jordan. One of them was killed by the military, and the other still living there with his family in my parents' house, which is almost damaged in hard situations.
What would you want people to know about refugees that they might not know?
I want the world or the people know that refugees, so many refugees are so smart, and maybe they were doctors or engineers or like high educated in their countries, but for some reason, like for our case, for because of the war, we came to the United States. Some doctors don't speak fluent English, so they didn't have a chance to evaluate their certificate. So they didn't have a chance to have the same level of jobs. But refugees still so smart. They can do whatever they want to do. They are so strong. They can face so many challenges, so they can reach their goal.
What has been the most helpful for you to feel like you're part of your community, or you're a part of your neighborhood, or you're now a part of life here in the United States?
My friends were very hospitable.
Hospitable, yes.
Yes, for us, because they were very helpful. So they supported us and helped us to join this community. So we didn't feel like we're strangers.
That's wonderful. Yeah. The first time I met Fatma, we were at her apartment complex and delivering some things that were needed. And she came up to me with this beautiful, bright face and asked for something that she needed in such perfect English that it really surprised me. How long have you been practicing your English, and what made you decide to learn?
I've been practicing actually since I was in fifth grade. I didn't stop practicing my English, but I focused on that since I came to United States 3 years ago, and I'm still learning and I'm still improving my language just to find better education for me or better life, better job for me. It's very important to learn the language in the country you are living in, because without a language, you cannot communicate with people, which is very important thing for your life.
Yeah. So what would you say to people who don't know refugees and who are curious about how to be helpful?
The people, they don't know refugees, maybe they need to follow up with the news. Maybe they need to read a lot or more about Syria or about the Syrian people, because Syrian people are on social media right now, and they share a lot of their special details or lives. So if they are interested to know about the refugees, they just read about them.
Wonderful. Do you think that there's anything that can be done to improve the way refugees are accepted socially or the way they're portrayed in the news?
Maybe to provide more locations to teach English that could help to make the communication between Americans and Syrians stronger. The idea of dinners or the introducing meetings is very, very wonderful idea, because that way Americans can know about the Syrians very easily. So I recommend to make it more and more, to do it again.
That's great. So do you still feel like a refugee, or do you feel like you now have a new home?
I feel like I have my new home. I've never felt like I'm a refugee in the United States, to be honest, because I have been treated in a good way for 3 years ago. So nobody heard in me. Nobody did racism to me. So I've never felt like I'm a refugee or a stranger in a strange country. I feel like I'm American without a citizenship.
Well, that's coming next, right?
Yeah, next.
That's good. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Absolutely. I hope it was helpful for you.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Wanna make sure I still know you. The song you are listening to is titled Nostrand Avenue by Mormon artist Belle Jewell. You can support her and other amazing Mormon artists by downloading her album End of an Era by Belle Jewell or find her on Spotify.